Hi, and welcome to the latest Ancient Egypt news from the opening week of February. In the heart of the awe-inspiring Karnak temples stands the great hypostyle hall, like a forest of towering columns adorned with intricate hieroglyphs and depictions of deities that have weathered the sands of time for millennia. However, the wear and tear of centuries has taken its toll on this architectural masterpiece. Faced with the challenge of preserving history, a team of dedicated archaeologists and restorers embarked on a monumental journey to breathe life into the Great Hypostyle Hall in 2021. The project began with meticulous planning and extensive research. Scholars delved into ancient texts, examined intricate hieroglyphs, and studied the structural integrity of the hall. Every stone tells the story of the passage of time, and the restoration team sought to honor the craftsmanship of the original builders by revealing the original vividly colored decorations while incorporating scientific techniques adhering to international conservation standards and protocols to ensure the longevity of their work. The Great Hypostyle Hall is an architectural marvel, boasting 134 colossal sandstone columns that resemble papyrus stalks. Standing out are 12 majestic columns in the central nave, towering over 20 meters in height, and crowned with expansive open papyrus blossom capitals. The main structural axis running east to west is dominated by this double row of columns, surpassing the height of 122 shorter closed-bud papyrus columns on either side of the central aisle. The purpose of these great columns was to support the high roof of the clerestory in the central nave. Ramesses II's influence here extends beyond mere inscriptions, and he adorned the 12 central columns with intricate scenes depicting offerings to the deities. Two distinct phases of reliefs on these columns reveal the evolution from raised to sunk relief, showcasing the king's interventions over time. The decorative scheme initially comprised a triangular leaf pattern. Scenes midway up the shafts, cartouche friezes, cobras near the top, and vegetation motifs on the wide papyrus blossom capitals. Ramesses II later enhanced these with additional stereotype decorations, including friezes of large cartouches, solar disks, and horizontal bandeau texts with the king's titles. His later inscriptions, carved solely in sunk relief, spanned from his first regnal year to his 21st year in power. Decades later, Ramesses IV added his own cartouches over the leaf patterns, while a later pharaoh, Ramesses VI, claimed credit by placing his name inside the cartouches, leading to a complex layering of inscriptions covered with plaster. The restoration not only preserves the structural integrity of the hall, but also unveils layers of historical interventions by various pharaohs. The Great Hypostyle Hall thus stands as a testament to the enduring legacy of ancient Egyptian craftsmanship and the ongoing efforts to safeguard this invaluable cultural treasure. Dozens of specialized young restorers from the Supreme Council of Antiquities, SCA, and Egypt's South Valley University, accompanied by experts, could be seen standing on high wooden scaffolding and busy at work. Armed with tiny brushes, they were removing the dust and sand from the hall's columns, while another group of restorers dressed in white coats, like surgeons, cleaned and restored the original engravings and colors of the columns with fine cotton pads. For the first time, visitors to Karnak's Great Hypostyle Hall will be able to admire its columns, original inscriptions, after decades of their being concealed by accumulated dust, smoke, and bird deposits, said Secretary General of the SCA, Dr. Mustafa Waziri, adding that 95% of the restoration project has been achieved, and within days the columns will recover their vivid colors. He explained that the project was carried out in three phases and also involved documenting and studying the hall's inscriptions, which provide valuable information about the history and religion of ancient Egypt. Describing the hall as a construction miracle from the New Kingdom of Ancient Egypt, Director General of the Karnak Temples, Mustafa Al-Sahriyeh, drew a parallel with the Pyramids of Giza, considered the construction marvels of the Old Kingdom. Isra Hussein, one of the project restorers, emphasized the honor of working on this project that revives the spirit of the columns and sheds light on the details of the city's monuments. The project also aims to enhance the cultural tourism experience in Luxor, known for its distinguished array of ancient monuments. The Ministry of Tourism and Antiquities is committed to creating a comprehensive tourist destination here that caters to diverse styles of tourism and different preferences, ensuring a well-rounded and enriching visit for travellers. A replica of the Karnak King List has also been installed in its original location at the southwest corner of the Akhmeno Hall at the Karnak Temples. The original list is on display at the Louvre in Paris and was taken there in 1843. Comprising the names of 61 ancient Egyptian kings, the list was composed during the reign of the 18th dynasty king, Thutmose III, to celebrate his ancestry since the founder of the 4th dynasty, King Sneferu. Although only the names of 39 kings are legible, the list is invaluable because it includes the names of many 1st and 2nd intermediate period kings not mentioned in any other lists. The open-air museum at the temples has also received a facelift as part of the restoration work, and the site as a whole has been improved by installing new seats, sunshades and signage to provide visitors with information and directions. Paving tiles that have gone missing over past decades have been replaced, and there is improved mobility for disabled people. New artifacts have been added to the open-air museum to enrich its displays. Among them are objects from the reigns of King Akhenaten and King Shabaka, and others that date back to the late period. The open-air museum is located in the northwest corner of the Karnak Temples. The Karnak Temples complex is intricately divided into three compounds, the precincts of Amun, Mut and Montu. For most visitors, the sprawling precinct of Amun alone is the focus of the visit, boasting a layout that dwarfs every other site one might encounter in the whole of Egypt. A joint Italian-Polish archaeological mission has uncovered during their work at the Sheikh Mohammed site in Aswan the skeletal remains of a young woman who suffered rheumatoid arthritis. A study on the skeleton published in the International Journal of Paleopathology showed the woman whose skeleton has been discovered suffered one of the earliest cases of rheumatoid arthritis in ancient Egypt. Mustafa Waziri underscored the importance of the discovery, which he said indicated the only instance of diagnosed rheumatoid arthritis in ancient Egypt on record and one of the oldest cases globally. Waziri noted that further scientific studies will be conducted on the discovered skeleton, which provides incontrovertible scientific proof that ancient Egyptians were aware of the existence of cases of rheumatoid arthritis. Although a clinical definition of the disease emerged only in the 17th century, the recent archaeological evidence suggests that cases of rheumatoid arthritis antedate the 17th century, he pointed out. Abdel Monem Said, General Director of Aswan Antiquities, reported that studies on the discovered skeleton have shown that rheumatoid arthritis had affected joints on both sides of the body, from hands and feet to shoulders, elbows, wrists and ankles. Said added that though the mission has scrutinized written and visual evidence for a clear indication of similar cases, it could not find any record of rheumatoid arthritis in ancient Egypt. In their published study, the co-directors of the mission, Maria Carmela Gatto of the Polish Academy of Sciences and Antonio Corsi of the University of Bologna, said only 50-60% of the skeleton of the woman described in the study has been recovered, adding that the examination of the fragmented skeleton showed that erosive lesions with smooth edges were found outside the joint surface. These lesions, they explained, would have led to aches, stiffness and swelling, all of which would have affected the joint's ability to carry out daily activities. Furthermore, the co-directors of the mission explained in their study that with time, the person's suffering would have intensified, raising the likelihood of developing other conditions such as heart disease, thus compromising the individual's life expectancy and quality of life. On the other hand, paleopathologists Madeleine Mant of the University of Toronto in Ontario and Mindy Pitre of St. Lawrence University in New York, who contributed to the study, said rheumatoid arthritis, which is the most common form of inflammatory arthritis, occurring in 0.5 to 1% of the global adult population, typically emerges between the ages of 30 and 50. They explained that this chronic inflammatory autoimmune condition affects the lining of joints and various body parts, including the skin, eyes, mouth, heart, and lungs. Given its autoimmune nature, the body's immune system targets its tissues, resulting in inflammation of the joints as well as pain, disability, and eventual early death. Mant and Pitre noted, adding that while the exact cause of the condition is unknown, factors such as biological sex, smoking, family history, genetics, and exposure to certain bacteria and viruses increase one's risk of developing the condition. In addition, the two scientists pointed out that although there are multiple treatment options today, few, if any, would have been available during the second intermediate period in Egypt. A clear consensus has yet to be reached on the origin and antiquity of rheumatoid arthritis, they said in a statement, highlighting that some researchers believe there is enough archaeological and historical evidence to suggest its existence in Afro-Eurasia before the 17th century, while others have argued that such evidence remains controversial, suggesting instead that the condition originated in the Americas. This new case from Aswan provides strong evidence in support of the former hypothesis, Manton Petre asserted, adding that even though skeletal remains from ancient Egypt had indicated in the late 19th and early 20th centuries the presence of some of the earliest cases of rheumatoid arthritis, the cases were dismissed on the grounds of imprecise diagnostic criteria. Since then, examples of possible cases have been described from prehistorical and historical contexts in North America, Europe, and Asia, several of which remain contentious, according to both scientists. Similarly, Mant and Petre asserted that scholars have also examined written and pictorial evidence for signs of the condition. They noted that although a lack of textual mention of rheumatoid arthritis in ancient Egypt suggested that the condition in its present form did not exist at the time, the recent discovery from Aswan provides clear evidence for the presence of the condition in ancient Egypt. The project, which began in 2005, aims to study the health conditions of ancient Egyptians, especially those belonging to the lower strata of society and residing on the outskirts of the ancient Egyptian state, such as in the far south. The project focuses on archaeological services and documentation of prehistoric areas. It is affiliated with the University of Bologna in collaboration with the Institute of Mediterranean and Oriental Cultures, Polish Academy of Sciences. In 2016, the mission discovered the earliest cases of vitamin C deficiency in the skeleton of a young child found in a village dated to the pre-dynastic period. A study of this case was also published in the International Journal of Paleopathology. A controversial plan to cover one of Egypt's Giza pyramids with granite cladding will likely not be possible, given rock nature and international archaeological restoration law, according to a prominent archaeologist, following a massive public backlash against the plan. The announcement of the project last week has sparked criticism and ridicule among experts and social media users, with many expressing concerns over the fate of a wonder of the ancient world, dismissing the plan as tiling the pyramid. Egypt's Antiquities Ministry said the restoration aims to reinstall hundreds of granite blocks that used to form the outer casing of the Pyramid of Menkaure, the smallest of the three main pyramids of Giza. The 4,500-year-old structure was originally covered in 16 courses of granite blocks, but only seven remain today. Mustafa Waziri dubbed it the project of the century as he made the announcement, but some archaeologists have taken issue with the plan and say it would be unworkable. The blocks around the pyramid are all unpolished and incomplete. They're totally unsuitable to be reconstructed on the surface of the pyramid, says Egyptologist and former Antiquities Minister Zahi Hawass. Even if the blocks were fit, Hawass says, under international principles of archaeological restoration, the style of a monument should be kept unchanged. The pyramid was constructed as a monumental tomb of the 4th dynasty pharaoh Menkaure around 2,500 BCE to an original height of 65.5 meters. It now stands at 61 meters. Experts believe the unfinished nature of the granite cladding indicates that King Menkaure died before the structure was finished and his son completed the stonework. The new project will most likely be confined to topographic mapping of the pyramid and documentation of granite blocks found, Hawass said, adding that officials rushed into how they presented the plan to the public. Digging in the site, however, will continue with the aim of unearthing more layers of the bedrock beneath the pyramid, he said. The team is hopeful they could uncover other important findings in the process. No one will touch the pyramid. The pyramids are sacred, he said, adding that the committee's official results will be announced within days. Some critics mistakenly thought rows of granite blocks encasing the lower part of Menkaure, seen in a recent video showing workers digging up around the base of the pyramid, were newly constructed, but Egyptologists said they were part of the original structure and have been there for centuries. The project, led by an Egyptian-Japanese archaeological mission, is slated to last 3 years, Dr. Waziri said. Studying fallen blocks, including through photogrammetry and laser scanning, will take at least 1 year. Heritage conservation in Egypt has become a source of debate following several controversial projects that have resulted in razing historic areas and flawed renovation of hundreds of years old mosques. It's too early now to discuss the reinstallation. Study results will be put forward to the International Committee before any next steps are taken, Waziri said. As a result, Minister of Tourism and Antiquities, His Excellency Ahmed Issa, issued a ministerial decree forming a Supreme Scientific Committee, led by archaeologist and former Minister of Antiquities, Dr. Zahi Hawass, to review the restoration project for the Menkaure Pyramid at the Giza Plateau. The committee consists of engineers and archaeologists, particularly pyramid specialists from Egypt, the United States, the Czech Republic, and Germany. The committee's primary task is to evaluate the proposed architectural restoration project for the Menkaure Pyramid, initiated through collaboration between the Supreme Council of Antiquities and Waseda University's mission from Japan. Upon completion of the project review, the committee will produce a comprehensive scientific report detailing its findings and recommendations. This report will also outline the necessary procedures for coordination with UNESCO. Before any work commences on the Menkaure Pyramid, the committee's report will require approval from the Ministry of Tourism and Antiquities. The SEA will provide the committee with all relevant data and information to ensure the project's success. An international press conference will be eventually organised to announce the committee's findings and the decision regarding the project's commencement. And finally, all work on the Grand Egyptian Museum, the GEM, including engineering work and the organisation and display of artefacts, will be completed by the end of February 2024, according to a recent cabinet statement. Artefacts have been put on display in the vast 22,000 square metre main hall. The Grand Staircase has already been open to the public since December 2023. The GEM mega project is the world's largest museum dedicated to a single civilization, centered around the colossal statue of King Ramesses II in the atrium, as well as Egypt's first eco-friendly national museum, having received the Egyptian Green Pyramid accreditation in September 2022. And that's it for this week. This news podcast is brought to you by Ted Laux and GNT Tours. For information on our next tour, please visit our website at gnttours.co.za. There will be a link in the show notes. Follow us on Facebook, on X, or on Instagram. Thanks for listening to this episode. Please feel free to comment and share. Until next time, thanks again. Cheers. Bye-bye.